Hi everyone, Sam here with the Atom CTO podcast. I've got Bhairav Patel, my partner in crime, co-founder at Atom, who we're going to ask a couple of questions to. So, Bhairav, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? How did you get started in the world of IT?
Yeah, so thanks for that, Sam. So my journey into IT was a little bit strange. So I think I was one with a VIC-20 back in the day, so I had the computer, early kind of adopter of technology, you know, so I love computers, and I actually had a bit similar to yourself where you were coding from the big books and just you know, writing huge programs. My cousin and I used to do that to build games way back in the day, but honestly, I wasn't really, you know, I had an interest in computers. I actually did an IT GCSE, and I remember that I had to write an essay on which one's better, a dot matrix printer or a laser printer. And I remember that quite vividly. It was a bit random, but I went...
What was better?
It was a laser printer at that time for that. But it was too expensive. I think it was really... Those were really expensive. So then I think my recommendation is buy inkjets because they're cheaper to maintain. So, I mean, I kind of did arts A-level. So I did English, French, history, and then ended up doing a law degree. And essentially my journey after finishing my law degree was that I didn't really want to be a lawyer. But I didn't know what I wanted to do. So I ended up applying for absolutely everything that you can imagine to under the sun. So whether it was advertising, you know, Glaxo, Wellcome back in those days, and SmithKline Beecham and Mars. And so Unilever, Procter & Gamble, I went for all the kind of different management courses you could imagine after having done the law degree. And eventually what I found was that most of the jobs weren't that interesting. And it was only until I interviewed at PwC for the management consultant position that it sounded that it was something interesting to do. So not only did they take you and they teach you C and Java, and they obviously teach you consulting skills, but they also had the opportunity to travel, which was a big thing for me. So I ended up applying to PwC, getting on their management consultant course. And then from there, it kind of kicked off. I ended up in a project in Lithuania as my first project, Lithuania Telecoms, which was actually where the telecoms... The way it was done out in Lithuania at the time was all manually, all done piece of paper. So if you wanted to disconnect your phone, you'd go to the local office and they would cross your name out of a book. And then a week later, someone would go out and then, you know, literally pull the plug out of your from your house. And so what we had to do there was digitize the whole thing, which was immense because it meant putting in, it was just a huge project. So not only are you creating CRM system, but you're creating order management systems, workflows for engineers to go out on site and deal with all of that, plus billing. So all of this was digitized, and it was a huge project, which was a lot of fun. And it was absolutely intense, but a lot of fun. And from there, I kind of, you know, ended up moving into more technology, large technology programs with O2 and Telenor in Norway. And then moving from that into contracting. So I ended up for a while as a contractor again with telcos in Norway, and then ended up becoming a CTO. And that is an interesting story in itself, where we were out in the south of Norway, actually in Kristiansand, where you were, Sam, and I was working for a large e-commerce business. They'd grown massively from 2006 to 2010 when I got there. They'd grown massively. But unfortunately, one of the issues with growth is you suddenly hire lots and lots of people, and then you realize you've got too many people working for you and you're not making a profit. And so my old CTO from a telephony company that I was working at became their CEO, and we ended up going through I wrote the strategy, and we implemented that, built the team and implemented that team. And that was a crazy ride. But that kind of gave me the taste of being, you know, the CTO, and then I haven't looked back ever since, really. Obviously working with you, Sam, in Aztec, a fintech that was there before the days of fintech in 2012, and then working again in e-commerce, and then obviously working with a lot of different companies on the side. So the journey has really gone, I guess it's a long-winded answer to the question, but I kind of started in law and ended up loving the tech side of it all.
It's interesting as well. A lot of people I know in this industry started off similarly, either with law degrees or philosophy degrees or English degrees or whatever. It doesn't really matter. There was actually quite a few, very few people I worked with that came from a kind of computer science-y background.
Yeah, it was weird. At PwC, with the intake, what you saw was that I think it was about 80-20 split, or maybe a 60-40 split. So you had... The minority were non-computer science, but in weirdly, they're the ones who are the best at building solutions. So they're the ones who didn't have a formal computer science background. I guess they hadn't picked up a lot of the bad habits that you can pick up during your computer science degree, right? So we were coming with a fresh slate, and people who were the most impressive were the ones who had done things like classics and journalism previously, which was very odd. And I think, like, today, I would not be able to be hired in many organizations because I don't have a computer science degree or a master's in computer science or any kind of, you know, high-level education around it, which I find very, very interesting. And we've kind of gone down that path now where everyone has to have a computer science degree, which I don't 100% agree with, but anyway.
No, absolutely. Yeah, generally the experience speaks more than your degree. And when was this? This was back in the 90s, right? When you were...
Yes, 98, 99. Yeah. So, yeah, I started PwC in 99. So I've been around for a while.
Yeah, so no, obviously you would have seen things change over that time as well.
Yeah, you know what? What I find the most interesting... So one of the things that we always talk about when we're talking to clients is the fact that we've been outsourcing for... Oh, I've been dealing with outsourced resources for 20 years now. And what you find is that at the very beginning, the early days of IT, I think that there was... I hate the word passion, but it seemed that people were much more involved in IT for IT's sake, in discovering something new, and it was, you know, a new world of possibility. And okay, you do see that a little bit with things like AI, blockchain, but what you find over the years is that now it's just become a job, right? And it's people doing stuff because it's just another job, like being a bus driver or, you know, being an accountant. And you kind of, a lot of that real enthusiasm has gone, and people just, you know, to find those guys that have additional side projects is getting harder and harder, which I find strange. I mean, a lot of times when we're looking to hire, we don't necessarily, you know, as we said, we don't necessarily need to have a computer science degree, but you have to show some interest in it. So are you doing something with a Raspberry Pi? I mean, I remember in NetTunnel, and you know those guys well, you know, they all had side projects and they were all building, you know, their own home entertainment systems out of Raspberry Pis and different things. And so that's what you're kind of looking for, right? And I think that's the biggest change I've seen is that, you know, I guess that enthusiasm, of course it is there, but because now it's become more of a job, you have less of that. People are doing less in their spare time with IT. But maybe that's just something I've seen. I don't know.
No, I think absolutely I agree. Back in the day when it was still niche, it was still a little bit exclusive. It was a little bit more exciting. And now it's mainstream, right? It's everywhere. Everyone is a technologist, whether you like it or not. And most businesses that we deal with, you know, even though they're not technology focused, technology is underpinning their entire business. I think that has changed everything. Whereas before it was still cool and elitist almost, but now it's just, eh.
Yeah, and I think that's actually one of the most interesting things is that technology pervades every aspect of a business. And I think that's what people lose. When people think CTO, they think they're going to need to hire someone that is specifically there to build an app or to build a platform or web application or a game or whatever it is, actually. And that's really not what a CTO's role should be. It should be part of that role, but you're also looking at how we're using technology for sales and customer service and logistics and all those different areas, right? And how do they combine with whatever it is I'm trying to sell, whether it's a product or a platform or if it's furniture, and how do you integrate all of that? And that's really the CTO role, right? That's understanding IT or technology from a holistic perspective. And that's where I think you need to have the interest in lots of different things. Because I think if you're a CTO that's ever done one thing, then you don't take in the best practices from other areas, or you're just not that curious, right? And you need to be curious to be a CTO.
Absolutely. And as we've discovered, there's kind of different levels of CTO and different flavors of CTO of different companies and different stages of companies. So a very technology-focused startup probably wants a more technical CTO, whereas a more mature company that's in a growth stage or in a larger expansion stage, they probably care less about the technology and more about the business aspects and the networking. You know, who does this guy know? Who can he help us with?
Yeah, and I think those are very important points. And I think what we see when we're, you know, when we've been, like you and I have been dealing with companies that have looking for virtual CTO services, I think there's an initial confusion, right? That they think that, you know, we would come in and start coding for them. And that's not what we do. And there's a very good reason for that is that A, we won't be the best at various technologies because we would have been out of it for quite a while. But B, also, you know, what we really need to do is look at it from a holistic perspective and not just be focused down on one thing. And what's been interesting is in a couple of the clients that we've had is that, you know, they've had very old school CTOs, so people who are a little bit older than us in their 50s, who are very much of that old ilk where, you know, IT is the dog's bollocks. It's the thing that everyone, you know, it's the best department with the most to finish, la-di-da. and they ignore the business. So like, no, we don't want to talk to the business. All the business does is give us, you know, more requirements, and we want to fashion this wonderful thing. And you know, you're seeing that kind of conflict happening, but you don't see that with the younger CTOs who embrace technology, who are trying to embrace business more, but don't have that experience. So I guess where we step in is that we can help those younger CTOs gain that business knowledge, and where you're transitioning away from like an older CTO that doesn't necessarily want to get involved so much with the business, we are very much involved with the business, right? We try and align the IT and the business strategies together. So I think that's the strengths that we would have, I think, coming to a project.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, that was probably one of the kind of the core foundations for starting Atom, right?
Yeah, definitely. I think you and I saw a lot of problems out there, right, that were created by people not planning or understanding what they wanted. So you and I obviously worked a lot in Norway with startups, and I think one of the things that we saw mostly was that people spending a lot of money and not getting what they wanted for it. And I think that's what the main issue that we're trying to prevent right here, by helping businesses have a clarity of vision, but also being able to then explain that to the technical teams in a way that they understand. And actually, you know, keeping an eye on the technical teams, making sure that they're not, you know, they're not selling services, overselling stuff or underselling stuff or overpricing it, and, you know, making sure that people get what they want from the money that they have available. And I think that was the main motivation for Atom, is to make sure people don't fail because of IT, really.
That's it. Making sure everything's fair and balanced and be that voice of reason.
Yeah. And I think it's funny. I think even now we're still seeing it. I mean, this will be obviously another podcast at some point, but you know, one of the biggest problems I think we have with customers that come in, clients coming to us, is setting their expectations. Because everyone wants everything done cheaply. They hear that they can get stuff done on Upwork, or they can get someone on Fiverr, or they can get an Indian developer for 20 quid a day or whatever it is. And what they're not seeing is that, yeah, you can get that, but you know, whatever will be delivered is not going to sustain you as a business going forward, right? And there's a lot of bells and whistles that need to be thought about. And I think that is still the continual perennial problem every client that we ever face is helping them understand that you need to spend a little bit more to get more, but what you'll have will keep you going for a longer period.
Absolutely. And even though you might be paying slightly more today, you're getting higher quality output. So instead of, you know, spending twice as long, you do it in half the amount of time. Cost more, but overall the cost is lower.
Yeah, and I mean, you definitely know these stories, but I've heard them so often, where, you know, companies have spent 100 grand, like at 150 grand project, and they spent 100 grand and got nothing from it. And so they come to us with 50 grand saying, oh, what can we do with 50 grand? And so, well, brought us in at the very beginning, we would have been able to help you, but of course we can still help. It's just that you're not going to get exactly what you want.
That's it. Yeah. The constant challenge.
Yeah, definitely.
So out of all of these challenges that we face constantly, what's your favorite? What do you get out of bed in the morning to come and tackle?
So I think for me, I think I'm always continually shocked at is that, you know, what we take for granted on a day-to-day basis, that there are things that we think are normal, other people think are wow. And but I guess that's a little bit because of what we're doing. And so I'm always constantly surprised when, for example, working with a charity at the moment, you know, and trying to get them to, they've been very, very good, actually. They've been able to embrace things that we're talking about and, you know, put their thoughts down in a clear manner, have a realistic understanding of what can be achieved in the time. And it's working with people like that, you know, who actually get it. I think that's the thing, is that, you know, there are certain people out there that will continually only want the cheapest solution. And I'm not necessarily too excited about that. But it's when you engage with someone who really understands the potential of what they're trying to do and understands, okay, we need to do this in a kind of systematic way. And there's, you know, they like to follow the process and guidelines and actually take things step by step and understand that, you know, their vision may change as the path that they go down, you know, their vision may change as they go down that path, simply because they'll see new things along the way. And they're, as long as they're open to that and not kind of set in stone, I think those are the kind of people I like working with. And I think we've been lucky with Atom to have a number of those clients on board. And really it's making sure, you know, when you have a customer who comes to you and say, I've got 150 grand and you deliver what they've got and you can see them making money, that's exactly what you want to do, right? As a CTO and as an Atom as a business.
Absolutely. I mean, if all of our clients fail, that hardly looks good on us, right? So it's in our best interest to make sure that everyone is succeeding. And as you say, it's all about having that good fit. So, you know, we could be the absolute best in whatever area, but if there's not a good rapport or good communication with clients, it won't work. It doesn't doesn't run smoothly. So that's also part of the balance.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, when you get to the CTO level, it's all about relationships, right? So it's about how you deal with the people around you, the CEO, the COO, CFO. And if you don't have that good working relationship, then it's not going to work.
That's no it.
How good you are.
It's all about the culture fit. So what kind of stuff have you been up to lately? Is there anything funky you've been working on?
Yeah, so I mean, what's interesting is that a number of our clients during this period have are kind of, okay, we're in the coronavirus period at the moment, and a number of our clients are actually, I wouldn't say making hay out of it, but their products are perfectly positioned. So we're working obviously with an invoice financing business that has kind of seen a surge in demand simply because people are you know, having issues with liquidity at the moment. Then obviously we're working with this charity, Baby Buddy. So they're trying to help parents through from conception to 5 years old and looking to integrate with NHS. That's a very exciting project. It should help a lot of people. And they've obviously seen impacts on their first version of the app, and that's been very positive. And hopefully with this new version of the app, we'll be able to reach a lot more people. And then obviously Sophia, who's the EdTech guys, and they've got great software, which we've helped develop, which allows them to bring tutors and parents together. And obviously during this time when kids are at home, this is a great way for them to reach out to give parents a break, really, so that they can work and the kids can go and do virtual classes. And that's pretty cool, I think. So, you know, there's always, the great thing about Atom is we do a lot of varied types of projects. So it's always, there's always something a little bit different going on. And I think that's what, you know, obviously keeps us a little bit more, it keeps us enthusiastic, but also it's very fascinating to see how all these different areas develop during times of crisis and even in the good times. So I think, yeah, that's the kind of stuff we're up to at the moment. And obviously doing more podcasts.
The best kind. I like it. Very cool. All right. Well, thank you for that nice introduction. Let's carry on in the next podcast.
Cheers.